Welcome to the Bank Marketing Show, the podcast that engages and informs you for success in today's marketplace. It's the show that will make you a better marketer with trends, tactics, and inspiration from experts and industry leaders. If you're wanting to impact your personal success and position your bank as the best choice in your market, you're in the right place. Now let's dive into today's show with your hosts, Chris and Dan.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Bank Marketing Show. I'm, like I say, half your host, Dan, and welcome, Chris. Good to see you.
Yep. Good to see you, Dan.
Yeah, today we're really interesting conversation coming up here. I'm excited to kind of get into hiring and cultural things within the bank and you know, how that can impact your marketing and the way your bank's perceived out in the community. So I'm really excited for this. Chris, you want to tell us more? Tell us who we've got.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, this is going to be great and kind of a cool value set, I think, for our listeners, Dan. So there we go. Brett, we teed you up really big for that. So
fantastic.
There you go. Well, Brett, really great to have you. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I'll kind of give a brief overview of Dr. Brett Andrews and preface it with Brett and I have become personal friends and I've served on the advisory board for the Belhaven University Business School for a while now. We've gotten to know each other and you know, through that, Brett, I was really excited about the value and insight that you're going to bring to our listeners today. So thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to.
Yeah. So Brett, you have been an accomplished academic leader for 20 plus years. I know one of your big grooves during that time has been the introduction of new programs across a lot of different levels. So that's been 39 plus, you know, across your experience, strategic planning, accreditations, obviously in the university world is a big thing. And you've led a lot of those, major gift campaigns, all of that. And in your role as dean and executive vice president. And, you know, you recently, came to Belhaven University, with an MBA, a PhD, and a lot of great energy. So it's been great to see what you've done since you've come on board, Brett. And, really great to have you with us today.
Well, thank you so much. I think you're making me out to be Superman here with the cape. Like you, I'm just a guy who works really hard and loves what I do. So really delighted that we get to share today.
Great. Well, thanks.
I think it's Superman with a commencement robe, right?
There you go.
Yeah, it's in the background. Commencement is next week. So
there you go. I love that. Well, so to kind of push the ship off the shore here, Brett, I was having a conversation with the CEO of one of the state banking associations that we work closely with on a regular basis, and we were kind of having our take the pulse of the industry discussion. Here it is as we're recording this, close to the end of the year and all of that. And one of the things that he asked me about and I recanted is that a constant part of the discussion that I'm hearing and our agency is hearing from our community bank clients throughout the Southeast, and Dan, I'm sure up even in Midwest and up in your area, is hiring, is personnel, and the struggle to bring in, to attract new talent, to bring in the kind of leadership that is going to help with differentiation from a community bank to, you know, one of the large regional or national banks, because relationship is so much of what, as marketers, is what we're helping our bank clients to sell, right?
Absolutely.
So anyway, it's a constant struggle. It's a pain point, Brett, and it's a discussion that we're hearing from our folks all the time. So I wanted to kind of tee that up and say to you as our guest today the very high level of relevance, you know, this discussion has to our folks. So, And so with that, Brett, with so many of ours struggling to hire, start kind of big level maybe, and what are some of your thoughts to begin to address that?
Yeah. So, well, the first thing that I would tell anybody who has an issue with this or has recognized it in any way is that generational differences, older workers who can't seem to crack the code on younger workers in terms of leadership or productivity or any of the things that we worry about in business, that you are not alone. And that generational differences are not some new phenomena. They have always been here and they just are what they are. So if you've got an issue with them, it's okay. And they are solvable and you can do this. So that would be the first thing that I would say from kind of a global perspective.
Good news.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I have been a professor and an academic leader teaching 18 to 24-year-olds since the mid-90s, early 90s. And it is that perspective that I can bring on what every new generation's worth of 18-year-olds that enter into the classroom kind of bring. And so I get to talk about this often, and it's a subject that I really love to do. Let me first start with just let's define some terms. Everybody throws around baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, and most recently Gen Alpha. So baby boomers are kind of at the top of the food chain at this point. They were born in the 40s and 50s often, and then Gen X came along roughly the mid-1960s to about 1980. And then the millennials showed up. And the millennials were born roughly 1980 to about 1997-ish. And then Gen Z, which are entering the workforce now, were born 97 to 2012, something like that. But there's an interesting fact, and I would ask you to kind of contrast with me millennials versus Gen Z, because Gen Z is the one that's entering the workforce right now, and millennials have been there, some of them for quite some time. If you're in your mid-40s, you're kind of at that beginning of the millennial stage. The interesting thing about the bridge between millennials and Gen Z is the internet. That is really what divides the two groups. Millennials, by and large, were born in a time and or grew up in a time when there wasn't an internet. And that 1997, where I kind of draw the line between millennials and Gen Z, 1997 is kind of a unique year because it was during that year that the very first internet transaction took place for a product. And from then is obviously exploded. And we just got out of Black Friday where we were all on our phones trying to track down what products we want to buy for Christmas or just because they were on sale at that time. And almost nobody has, goes to the store at 4 o'clock in the morning anymore to get in line. So it is a completely different world.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the exact same transactions are happening, the enablement of technology changes everything. So those are the big things. And I'd love to kind of just spend a few minutes kind of comparing and contrasting the two, millennials and Gen Z. But I would start it off by saying that every new generation gets a bad rap at the beginning from the generations that come behind it because of those generational differences, and we don't quite understand what they're thinking. You know, millennials, when we first started talking about them, we were all convinced that they were just narcissistic and entitled and disengaged with everything. But now that we've had a chance to work with them for a while, we find out that they're actually very tolerant. They're very relationship driven. They're authentic and honest. They're curious, creative, and that leads to some great kind of entrepreneurship vibes with them. And, but Gen Z that's coming along is not simply a younger version of millennials. They have some of those traits, and some of them are very exaggerated and others that have diminished. But the main thing that divides the two, and I can get deeper into a lot of this, is fear. Nationwide, now I'm not talking about any one state or locality, but think about it. The Gen Zers that are entering the workforce today, in the last 20 years that they've been growing up, they've been raised in an element of fear. Okay, we can't let you walk to your school by yourself anymore, like you and I probably did when we were kids. There are predators on the internet, and so we have to be fearful of that. There's a voice in society that said words are violence, and so we have to be afraid of the words that we say. And they grew up in a time where every authority figure was trying to protect them in some way. And so it's unfortunate, but fear is kind of an innate thing.
The pandemic accentuated that.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Very much so. It made it very
hundredfold.
Acute.
Yeah.
And you know, whose voice do we listen to? It has kind of ingrained itself into this generation so early in their life. It's not unlike in previous generations that maybe went to war in World War II or Vietnam, that was the big event in their life, where they went through a major economic depression or something and you lost your job and that impressed something upon you. This evolving event that culminated with COVID has impressed itself in the exact same way on the psyche of the folks that are just entering the workforce. And so I'd love to unpack some of that with you.
I think it's the thing you're making me think of here for, you know, for banks is, I think a big trend is just that it's, you know, that if you unpack that fear a little bit, I think there's an element of it of, you know, I think distrust in authority is probably a little strong, but like a just apprehension or you as a professor, probably better word for it, but you know, it's not just trusting authority by default. Right. It's
exactly,
you know, the police are there to protect me, but also there's some bad things about that. And I think that extends to banking as, you know, you can't be trusted just because you're a 100-year-old institution, right? Mm-hmm. I've still got to do some research. I've got to, you know, build my own trust with you. And I think that, you know, it's like, I think that extends to a lot of things that Gen Z does. It's not just kind of authority or institutions. It's anyone they're buying a t-shirt from or anything like that, but it's a different approach, right? I think
exactly.
It's that you know, trend from baby boomers on, it went from like they're big institutions and those are the ones you trust now to like the size doesn't matter. It's we've got to build our own take on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I've noticed that there are really distinct, and I'll call them categories of kind of differences among the generations, and it has to do with the choices that they have or want to make in their life and career, the priorities that they have, their view on time, on timeliness, how emotional they are, how well they are linked to their family unit is dramatically different from millennials. And they have really unique views on, you know, in the workplace, on feedback and career growth, leadership,
flexibility, probably.
Yeah, flexibility. Yeah. And really just their level of confidence is dramatically different. So there are quite a few things that we can all, you know, brush up on to help us be a little bit more empathetic. We have probably all heard, if you're listening to this podcast, somebody tell you that you need to be a lifelong learner. You need to learn one new skill a year or something like that. This falls right in that line. And that is, everybody has the skill to build relationships, whether you're a C-suite executive down to a teller. And what we're talking about here in cross-generational communication and leadership is really taking that relationship building skill and just adding some new attributes to it or refocusing it in a different way. And you'll find that you are much, much more effective in getting through to your youngest workers and tapping into their productivity. And in fact, that is perhaps one of the biggest differences. Let me contrast the fear comment with this. Even though this may be a fearful generation, by all accounts, both anecdotally and in the literature that we study, this generation, Gen Z, will be the most productive generation in the history of mankind. Think about that for a second. Everything that you've accomplished in your life and career, those coming behind you will be exponentially more productive. They are the first generation to be true digital natives. Mm-hmm. And it is that ability to be not just at home with technology, but having it really just kind of baked into their DNA that will make them so productive in the years to come.
And their utilization of AI, no doubt, is going to catapult that even further.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. And yeah. we haven't even scratched the surface with what AI can do and the ways that we ought to use it versus ought not to use it. But those are still being debated in some of the, you know, the halls of universities and think tanks across mm-hmm. the world.
Yeah. So Brett, this kind of rolls to, I'm sitting in the chair of our listeners and thinking, okay, well, so Brett, I'm 54. Okay. My kids and stepkids are the age that we're talking yeah. about. Okay. So if I walk into the room and I try to dress like them and act like them, you know, or in any way, you know, it's the eye rolls and it's the whatever, you know, and then they're like, Dad, you can't relate and whatever the case may be. So in the frame of what we're discussing here is bank leaders, you know, wanting to attract these generations. I agree wholeheartedly that your point about empathy and understanding of who they are, what their composition is, what matters to them, it is crucial. So how do we as bank leaders, you know, begin to do that is express our empathy and understand better, but then it's not to walk into an interview room and go, hey man, I can really relate to you. That's a load that nobody wants to hear, and it's not going to fool anybody.
Yeah.
You know, so take your, if you will, take your thoughts a little further about and kind of getting in here to how do we attract
sure.
this generation into this industry?
Well, the first way to attract them is to understand them. And so let me try and unpack some of this a little bit for you.
Great.
If I can compare millennials with Gen Z. So millennials, they're older, but they're likewise a little bit more independent. They, when it comes to like making choices or having different choices, millennials are happy. They expect to have multiple choices, multiple options, but yet they seem to have a difficult time making decisions. That gets exaggerated a little bit in Gen Z, because Gen Z has a very heightened fear of making the wrong choice. And because of what we're seeing, we are seeing kind of this delayed adulthood happening as a societal trend. They also want to avoid making kind of adult choices. If I can say it that way, the grown-up types of choices that have consequences, so to speak. Millennials, when it comes to priorities, they're really loyal to people more so than organizations. They desire personal relationships, and they really value freedom, time with friends and family, that work-life balance kind of thing. But Gen Z is a little different. They are much, much less connected with others because they grew up with a cell phone. And they connect really well with peers, but they do it through technology and not in person, where they don't have as well developed of an in-person skill set. But that being said, is also an advantage because they are very individualistic in that way. They're not necessarily needing collectivism to make a decision. When they're ready to make a decision, they'll make it on their own. Millennials that I work with, strong dislike for wasting time, very productive. They understand time is money, and they're willing to invest their time in tasks that they think are achievable. But the Gen Z is a little different because they are just bombarded with advertisements, digital inputs, if you will. They spend an average of 6 hours a day online. So that's a lot of minutes being fed whatever it is that you're looking at, entertainment, advertisements, what have you. It leads to a much shorter attention span in Gen Z, but also they have much less a sense of time. In other words, they can get plugged into something and completely lose track of time. If you know a young person who's into computer coding or in the IT world, it's really apparent in that field, perhaps more so than others that I see. Gaming is the same way.
Dan and I probably see that a lot with creatives, you know, and graphic yeah. design and all of that in our industry as well, too. Man, I yeah. see them take off down a path, and sometimes you got to go find them, you know. Yeah,
that's exactly it. millennials and Gen Z are also different in the emotions they bring to how emotional they are, if I can say that. But, you know, millennials, they really, again, they value connection with others. They're very seldom alone or like to be alone. But yet they were the first generation to be really kind of prone to anxiety and depression. And Gen Z is kind of exponentially different. They're fearful, as we talked about, generically speaking, of just about everything, which goes along with anxiousness, depression and anxiety has exponentially increased in the clinical diagnosis of those things. And to that end, they want to decrease independence as a way to release felt anxiety. So they're a more emotional or emotionally centered generation than the millennials were. So I actually had a student tell me this. He said, I'm gonna read it off a note here to make sure I get it right. But every day it's like you have to wake up and put on a mask and try and be somebody else instead of yourself. And you can't ever be really happy. So that was a quote that I gathered, and he's right. You're kind of in this stimulus, this big bucket of stimulus that you can't get out of, you can't get away from. And you know, in the pre-internet days, you could go home and shut your door, and the world wouldn't intrude. And now it's really different because we invite the world in to follow us 24/7, and well, that provides many more opportunities. And a sense of self-worth related to that is often tracked in the number of likes that we have on social media and our social media profile, which opens the door to many other things that are probably outside of the boundaries of this discussion. There's also a difference in family. Millennials have really close ties to their parents. They're their best friends. They seek a workplace that's like a family. Gen Z is a little different. This is still kind of evolving as a conclusion as I kind of watch this, but they kind of wish they could have stayed children a little bit longer and delayed adulthood and adult decision making. That means they grow up a little more slowly. They spend more time alone, again, because they connect through technology and not in person. Whereas millennials view their parents as peers, Gen Z views their parents as protectors. And so the family nature dynamic is still there, but the role has changed a little bit. Feedback is also another way that I see them being dramatically different. Millennials love immediate feedback. Yeah, they love the clicks. They love the likes. Everybody wants positive and continuous feedback. And Gen Z is wants it, but they are fearful of the negative. They're fearful of criticism. They're fearful of failure. They're conflict adverse as a group. And because they have minimal experience in face-to-face conversation, the resolution or being able to say, hey, this is giving me some anxiety. Can you explain this a little better? Is a difficult conversation for them to have it. So, so that is a big difference, as is their confidence. Millennials appear confident. They're very good at appearing confident, but they are sensitive to rejection and disrespect. And Gen Z is less confident than millennials. Again, it's coming from that kind of fear-centeredness. And to that end, overcoming it, they desire lots and lots of positive reinforcement and encouragement, more so than we've seen in previous generations. Millennials, and this one's been around for a long time, that millennials wanted it all right now. They desire leadership opportunities. Mm-hmm. They participate in management. They think everything's negotiable. It's great. It kind of defines that entrepreneurial vibe of their generation. But Gen Z, more realistic about job and career growth. They want a steady paycheck. Remember the fear, the uncertainty of fear, that fear of financial insecurity and delayed onset of adulthood. And they're watching you know, the average family in the nation struggle with money, and in the last couple of years struggle with high interest rates and inflation, means that that has even become more acute. And I'm going to circle back to that one in particular. But that, you know, if I drew some differences between them, that it would kind of be grouped in those particular areas.
I think it's really interesting. I think to walk through those differences, and I think like a lot of banks from the marketing perspective think, well, we've just got to attract millennials and Gen Z. But you know, when you think about the nuance, it's the way that the conversations you need to be having. I mean, whether that's a real life conversation or a conversation via, you know, ads, online content, those types of things, needs to be different, right?
Yeah.
And I think even I've made the point a lot to our clients, like, okay, like talk more, you know, you want to attract millennials, but like, you know, millennials could be 45 or 26, and it's a very different life stage.
That's it.
And I've been in my house 10 years. I'm an elder millennial, right? I've been in my house 10 years. I'm nowhere near interested in first-time homebuyer stuff, but a lot of the younger side of the millennials are. And so it's I think from, you know, you probably continue to break it down, but it becomes more about kind of like the fear thing we were talking about earlier, just comes more about building trust. And
yeah, it really does.
Know, the thousands of ads we all see every day, everybody's oversold to. And so just trying to sell a product doesn't work for any generation. It doesn't really work for any generation anymore, because we're all just bombarded with ads all day, every day.
Well, let me talk for a minute to the C-suite executive or the, you know, the head of HR, whoever it is that's having that trouble, you know, connecting with the youngest workers that are walking in the door. Here's what you should expect if you go out, you know, and begin to try and connect with your youngest workers. Here's what you should expect to see. Generically speaking, you should expect to see work to be a low priority, or at least a lot lower than yours. And that's not wrong. It's just different. Mm. Because they connect digitally, expect them to have a very minimal or undeveloped skill set in that traditional etiquette training. Here in the business school, one of the things that we've worked in is, you know, how do you navigate a business lunch that's an interview or a five-course meal? How do you know what fork to use? Because they don't do a lot of social interaction, things like that are kind of foreign and kind of undeveloped. Expect to hear lots of questions, because Gen Z is very curious. Expect high turnover. Expect higher confidence, at least at the beginning of their work career, than competence. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, it just kind of is. Because again, the delayed onset of adulthood, expect minimal work experience when you look at a young person's resume. Expect poor, or at least poorer than average, time management skills. And so there's some remediation that we can help them with. Expect fragile egos. Again, that's that fear and protectiveness that they're missing from home. Expect that they will expect a constant connection via technology, family involvement, especially if there is an international flavor to it or a geographical dynamic where you're drawing employees from an area that's very family unit centered. You can get family involvement in a lot of the decisions, the big decisions that impact your life and career. Where you work, do you take the promotion, do you move to the other branch, et cetera. Expect an increase in noticeable mental health issues related to emotions, right? So that's what you can expect, all right? So out of all of that. But we can translate all that into some actions that you can take and things that you can do to help overcome those so that you're not walking around saying, hey, look at me, I'm dressing cool.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's where my wheels are turning.
Apparently, as Chris does when he gets home. Okay, what should you do? Okay, if you're sitting out there.
Yeah.
Well, communicate. All right. So communication is the flavor of every organization. We either do it really, really well or really, really poorly. There's really, you know, nothing in between. So with younger workers, use clear and straightforward language. All right, don't be afraid to explain stuff. What are the task retirements? Here's how you conduct yourself. What professionalism means in your organization. They will not necessarily intuitively pick that up. Explain the why along with the what. All right. So if you're explaining them, here's your job, here are the tasks I want you to do, make sure you work it into here's why your job is a critical piece of our success. And here's how you're going to help us. We'll go a long way to getting buy-in. There was a book written out of Harvard maybe 20 years ago on leading change management. One of the things out of it really works well here. And that was John Cotter wrote about planning for wins. In other words, planning for your people's success in advance of them actually getting there. And that is really important to Gen Z. Provide specific immediate feedback, but really even more than that, set them up for success on their first few weeks or months on the job, and make sure that you circle back around and give them a pat on the back and tell them how proud you are of them and that they're doing a great job. It'll go a long way to that connection. And finally, don't be afraid to initiate conversation with younger workers. And it doesn't have to be in an odd way. Just find something that you have in common. It could be sports. It could be the sports team from the college the student came from or you came from. It could be, are you going to, you know, take that time off to go vote today? It can be anything that you want to talk about. But again, in all of these things, be prepared that there will be a thread of emotion that runs through the whole thing. So those are kind of some concrete steps here. When it comes to feedback, focus, and again, we've heard this for generations. Do I just want to see you in the office, or am I going to celebrate the fact that you got something accomplished? Focus with this generation on task completion, not necessarily just hours clocked in and out. Did they produce? You'll be surprised if you start looking just for production, how productive they really can be. Assuming that there's a choice between those two. Celebrate success and make it visible. Again, when they have those wins, congratulate them, but also congratulate them so others can see. That's also a really beneficial, motivational spirit. One thing to avoid. Avoid, if you're going to give rewards for an accomplishment, avoid giving a reward that would require the employee to give up their personal time in order to get it. So, for example, if you do a really good job on a project and I want to buy you a steak dinner in town, great. That's fantastic. Don't buy tickets to a play or anything that would impose upon their personal time because they won't see it as valuable because that personal alone time is really high priority for them. Mm. So try and work your way around that with the rewards that we give if they're tangible. Recruiting. If you're recruiting folks, the best advice I can give you is to hire the right recruiter. And I have noticed a demonstrable difference. When I have folks come to my classrooms and speak based, you know, whatever they're doing in industry that, or it's a recruiting trip or what have you, the students will always be more engaged with somebody who is closer to their age range. Mm. And think about the ways that we talked about connecting online and through technology. It's much more likely that a student is going to hit you up, maybe even in the middle of your presentation with a text message, rather than raising their hand and standing up in front of everybody else. And that becomes more acute the older the speaker gets. In other words, the older the speaker, the less likely the student is to engage with them because of the perception of generation. You know, are they really going to understand who I am? So if you're recruiting, focus on the things that this generation thinks is valuable. What are the opportunities for you to contribute to this organization's success? Really painting that picture well for them. Focus on job security and the safety of the workplace, right? That needs to be part of your stump speech. Focus on task variety. it's not a mundane job because you get to do this and here's, you know, all the different variety of tasks that you get to do during the day or the week or the month. Focus on the meaning and the purpose beyond simply a paycheck. That provides much more, that's kind of the long game here. But if we can attract them with the others, the meaning and purpose will follow if there's joy to be had in the daily work of the job. And again, sidebar, it's a narrow slice, but don't think it's out of the ordinary if you offer a job or a raise or promotion to an employee and they want to go home and talk with their family about it. So that's just the connectedness of that delayed adulthood still lingering in their early adult years.
You know, Brett, I hope that this is such valuable information, and I hope what's happening in the minds of our listeners is going straight to pulling out those important points and, oh, this is what I can do internally. And to be transparent and honest too, the vast majority of my entire agency's team fits this mold. I mean, you know, I'm the old dude here, you know, and so it fits that. So, but for our bankers, you know, is pulling out the nuggets of some of the things that you have mentioned and going, hey, we're a long established 150-year community bank. What's going to make us sexy and attractive to this, to these younger generations? And I think you've offered some great answers in that, like family. I mean, you mentioned creating a family environment and consistency and solid ground and predictability. Man, those are things that, you know, I don't know, whatever. Working at the coffee shop or doing something like that is not necessarily going to provide that, but a bank can. And those are great points, Brett, about how, you know, we as a bank can be attractive to that, because these are things that we can offer to you. And on the other side of the coin also, some of the other nuggets that you've mentioned too, such as communication and digital communication and all of those things are not necessarily things that community banks have historically been great at, but really need to step up and begin to do a better job.
Yeah.
You know, of that. So, I mean, the quarterly employee printed out mailed newsletter, come on, you know, but the COO or the CEO texting so-and-so that's a, you know, 30 something and going, hey, man, I heard what happened with that deal. Great job. I mean, anyway,
it makes a huge difference. Let me tell you what my students tell me. And lest you think I'm kidding, this is exactly the way that they phrase it to me. When I ask them about email, do you read your email account? You know, the one that the school gives you, did you see what I sent you? They say, you know, I really just keep email in case my grandparents want to contact. And they don't read it very often. And you might ask them about social media, Facebook or Instagram. They say, yeah, you know, my parents use that quite a bit. So if mom and dad want to contact me while I'm at school, you know, I'll get an Instagram message or something. And, but texting, peers, Slack channels at work is where they'll be dominant. Snapchat, some of the other more emerging social media channels. And I'm not telling you if you're an executive, run out and get yourself a TikTok account, you know. That's not necessary. But just realize that if you send an email to a group down the hall and they're all 20 years old and nobody answers you until next Wednesday, it's not because they didn't prioritize communications from you. It's just that it never occurred to them to go look at email, because that's just not the way their generation predominantly communicates. Now, I know there are some scenarios where you have to use that, but generically speaking, don't be afraid to, as you just said, send a text message in lieu of anything else for an informal conversation with 20 of your employees. It's not going to hurt their feelings. And in fact, you'll probably get a lot faster and better response if you do that, as opposed to just, you know, sending that 2-page long email of here's the new policy of X. And you'll dramatically see an increase in your communication.
I think one takeaway I'm thinking of here is just if you're having trouble recruiting, right? Like these are all good perspectives to put in, you know, put in a job rec. Just really simple thing of I all the things you're talking about here are things that, you know, banks already kind of do, but are probably not great at talking about. I mean, job security, like it's a
exactly.
bank. you know, they stayed open during the pandemic. They're going to be around. You can talk about that. You can talk about, you know, like Chris, you were saying the family aspect of it. You're a community bank and within the bank as a community. And, you know, and I think the kind of older bank execs, you know, you may need to think about texting, think about different ways to communicate, but you've already, you know, most banks that we work with already have a lot of these elements. And I think there's a lot to kind of work with and here in what you're saying. I think this is all great stuff.
Yeah. And to jump, you know, over into the marketing part of it, Brett, do you think that there is, I'm kind of, you know, do you think there's a enormous value in utilizing these younger generations as marketers in how we're messaging and trying to reach other younger generation folks?
It's not just that, but you're in the marketing business. I've been in charge of millions of dollars of marketing cash in the past. And the traditional media is what it is. The new digital media, whether we're talking about Google AdWords or product placements or anything else that we want to spend it on digitally, then they all come with this really high cost and for good reason. But there are lots of organic ways that you can really increase your marketing presence using these youngest employees. Have you ever taken a minute to identify who are the biggest social media users in your employees? We have, and I've noticed this, that some of the best ways to connect with new clients is to have your employees really present on social media, doing whatever it is, you know, dance videos on TikTok. It doesn't matter. If they're connecting that back to the employee workplace, they're more likely to feel a kinship there. And if you want to work it into your formal marketing plan, consider, you know, if you've got a few employees who have, you know, thousands of people as followers, consider that an advertiser and pay them a few $100 to run an ad for you on their channel. And you will be reaching a whole new market in a very cost-effective way. So there's a lot of ways that you can both communicate indirectly to potential employees, but also directly connect with clients that don't respond well to a billboard or a TV ad on the 6 o'clock news. So everybody needs more clients. Everybody needs more and better employees. And they're out there, but it's just a much tougher game because it's not a linear exercise to run an ad and get some resumes like it used to be. So it just takes a little bit of adaptation of the things that you already do well.
Yeah. Brett, man, this I tell you what, this is going to be one of those episodes, I promise you, that our listeners are going to like refer back to and rewind and go, okay, that Dr. Andrews was going through his list and what was that he said? And let me listen to that again, because it was really key stuff to pay attention to. As the industry that we're talking about has got to and is trying to and has a desire to transform in connectedness. Right, from a recruitment standpoint and a marketing messaging standpoint with younger audiences.
Great stuff. Absolutely it.
Yeah, great stuff.
So I heard a rumor. I heard a rumor that this show is famous for the lightning round. Are we there yet?
Yes, that's what I was going to say. We're not. You're not getting out of here without the lightning round.
Fantastic.
Cool. Well, so here we go, Brett. I hope you're ready.
Okay.
So our first question in the lightning round is, can you share with us a personal best and or a business best?
Personal best. I've run the Ironman 4 times and it's very challenging. But the finish line is the most glorious place in the world.
Man, I can imagine.
Yeah. Business best, coming here to Bellhaven. It's one of the biggest schools in the CCCU. And we're I'm just thrilled every day that I get to come to work, and I just have a great team here. And I just enjoy where God has put me in this particular position.
Really, really cool. All right. So what's a favorite book or other resource?
Wow. So comic books don't count, I'm assuming. So yeah. I you know, I'm kind of a data tech nerd. And I have an old book that was given to me by one of my college professors. And it's about a really bit of minutia called Cronbox Alpha. And it's a stat book. And for whatever reason, I treasure it, not because I fall asleep at night reading it a whole lot, but because of the relationship in which I received it when he gave it to me. And so I treasure it for that reason. It's on my shelf today.
Very cool. Well, Brett, what's an impactful piece of advice that you've received that stands out?
Be present. Regardless of your situation, there are certain things that you need to be present for as an employee or a boss. Be there for birthdays because they don't come again. Attend the weddings that you get invited to because they won't come back again. Make sure you get together for that family gathering, because you may have the family members out in the future, but you never know when this might be the last time we get this big group together. So be present. It also translates to leadership well.
Mm. So that, especially in a world of constant distractions, like we were talking about, of remember to be present in those moments.
That's it.
So flipping that around, Brett, what is an impactful piece of advice that you give to your team?
Wow. Is if we make a mistake, we never, ever, ever punish the client for that. So if we miscommunicate, if we grade something wrong, we're in the education business, what have you, if we count your credits wrong, whatever, we don't push that back to the student and say tough luck. So our clients are really important to us, and we know they have choices. And so if we make a mistake, we own it early and often, and we settle it to their benefit. It goes a long way. And the second is just denoting that every organization has some kind of weirdness about it. And it is, look, no matter how clunky or manual or weird this process is in getting this done behind the scenes, please let's agree never, ever, ever, ever to show that to the client. So yes, we may not have the most up-to-date IT system at the XYZ company, but let's make sure that we don't show that to our customers. You know, we'll fix that along. Again, I'm very customer service oriented, and I recognize that my students, just like any customer at any other organization, they have choices. And we want them to be more satisfied for the value that they pay to come and get their education here. So those are the pieces of advice that we talk about a lot on my team.
Very good ones. Yeah. Well, Brett, if you're open to it, how can folks get in touch with you or maybe connect with you on your social or whatever the case may be, because they might be interested in further pulling on your brain from some of this great information.
Yeah. Well, you can contact me here at the university, Belhaven University. My info, if you go to the School of Business web pages, is at the bottom of every single page. You can contact me through Facebook or LinkedIn, which is probably the more popular when we're talking about business contacts. Just connect with me or shoot me a note. I'd love to connect with you and chat with you about what's going on in your company and your life. Even if there's not a business relationship between us, I'd still love to chat with you and just see what's going on. Helps me learn things.
Awesome.
Continual learning of it.
There you go. That's right. Well, folks, for our listeners, we always like to remind you here at the end that you can go to bankmarketingshow.com, and this episode with Dr. Brett Andrews will be on the forefront as you listen to this and can go through the show notes and pull some of these great nuggets that have been shared with us today. Brett, again, thank you. Such valuable information. Everything that we were hoping it would be and knew you would bring to us. So thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Dan. You guys have a fantastic show here. And I really just appreciate the opportunity to just sit and chat with you today.
Great.
Us too. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining us. To go deeper or get access to some of the valuable nuggets from today's show, go to bankmarketingshow.com. There you'll find episodes, links to resources, and much more. Be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts. And join us next time.